the worst Medicaid bill idea ever. I'm Jim DeBacchus on the left.
You heard the news here. Mitt Romney announces new car washes. Representative McKay on the right.
We're going to keep Columbus Day and daylight savings. I'm Natalie Goffner. I represent the political center, and this is both sides of the aisle. But first, this news.
Hey listeners, this is Ross Chambliss, producer of Both Sides of the Aisle, and I just want to apologize to you in advance. This week, while recording the show up at the Capitol, we experienced some technical audio problems. It's never happened before, and I want to promise that it'll never happen again. We're still going to air the show this week as it was recorded, but I just wanted to let you know.
Good morning, I'm Natalie Gawker. We're on Capitol Hill, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I'm joined on the political right by Representative Dan McKay.
Hey, good morning, Natalie.
And on the political left by State Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Hi, Natalie.
We've got 1 week left in the legislative session, and myriad of bills. I was just listening to the floor conversations, and it's just one bill after another. Let's let our listeners hear a little bit about some of these going on. Let's talk about the billboard bill. This is the one that talks about billboards on scenic byways, Representative Noel's bill. Getting heard in the Senate, Jim.
It is very hard to get. There's a handful of what's called America's Scenic Byways. It is a terrific honor. I mean, there's under 10 anywhere. It is this stretch of pristine. I hope you've had a chance to look at it. It just gives you goosebumps. People come from all over the world, and in the next generation or two, they're going to continue to come. And this is what happens when you give the state control. Noel wants Dewey Reagan and all the billboard companies there. And once you get a billboard company up, you can't ever get it down because they say, well, no, this isn't just about revenue now. This is for the next 100 years you owe us. So they're going to take this most beautiful, scenic, amazing land and turn it over so we'll have billboards like West Valley City on 39th South. It's a catastrophe, and it shows what happens when the state gains control over things. It's sold off to the highest bidder for a quick fix and destroys generations of beauty. It's a terrible, terrible bill.
Dan, I'm wondering if you think this bill's going to go anywhere. And when Jim gets emotional about a bill, he starts to lose his voice.
Yeah.
Or my voice is changing.
I think there's a possibility that Jim's position may be overstated, like a smidge, right? the scenic byways that they're looking to create and some of the limitations they're looking to create, it's not like it's going to be open season for billboards everywhere. And if we're going to change Zion's into, you know, billboard national park by any means.
Yeah.
Well, outside the park, lonely, desolate highway, can you be prompted for, you know, some of these billboard tactics?
Jim's shaking his head, so we've got the division.
We'll come together in the next one.
Let's go to another one that's a really challenging business bill. This is the HB 251, the non-compete agreement bill of Representative Schultz. This has got the business community just up in arms and in a way that I've not seen for a long time, where the people with a lot of diverse interests have come together to say this is wrong. Have you been working on this one, Dan?
I've watched the debate and I've seen some of this.
It's been heated, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I've received email from constituents who are quote trapped in their companies, right? And so I'm
so this bill would make it so you cannot a company can't have you sign an agreement that says you won't take knowledge you learn on this job and go work for a competitor.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically the human capital investment that businesses are trying to protect on a regular basis, and I get that. I have found, and this was one of the summaries of one of the employees said, that non-competes are a substitute for treating people well, right? So you don't, and once you get them in a non-compete, because it's like to a contract of adhesion, right? When you go to Best Buy, for example, and you buy something, on the receipt, there's a bunch of language on the back or on the front of the receipt, and it's, you know, you can wrap that thing around your head. It's so long. But it's a contract. You buy it, you get all the terms of that contract, even if you didn't know you were getting all the terms of that contract. It's a contract of adhesion. So when someone is looking for a job, at times, they're unemployed and they're getting into a job, and someone hands them a paper that says, you cannot compete with anybody else once you've had the knowledge you get from this information from being with our employer. So the problem I have with that is, and I've talked to other employers who are actually in favor of it, who say, we just treat our people really well and they don't want to leave.
They don't want to want to leave.
So you go both ways.
Has this come across your desk? I mean, there's only three states that have these types of
What's happened with the House? It passed unanimously, and then the business community suddenly figured out, oh my gosh, the House is on fire. Look, here's what this protects. Jimmy John's, the fast food place,
yeah.
It's hard to get people these days. So it makes all their employees sign a will not compete. And so these poor people, a lot of them making minimum wage now, can't get a job at another fast food place, which wouldn't hold up in court probably. But if you're making minimum wage, is that really an option?
Can you afford to challenge it?
That's my point.
But sandwich making is an art, Jim. And you're an art aficionado.
Jim, we know that it compromises some of the business practices of our tech companies, of our healthcare biomedical companies. I mean, there's a balance here that we can find.
And I could find that. I mean, I have a friend who works for a meatpacking company. He's in logistics. And in order to get a big raise, they said, you will sign this. So he cannot work again in logistics. Yeah. So, or he foregoes a big pay raise. Well, logistics is a big area. There's a ground where you'd say you can't work for a competitor or something. Right now, the law is too broad in the favor of employers.
Okay.
So, but aren't there already protections, Natalie, for a lot of those? So for in tech industry, right? Mm-hmm. Code is already patentable. The processes are already patentable. There is intellectual property set up to solve all of those problems.
Yeah, courts have set up specific guidelines. Our economy's working.
Yeah, so there are protections. There are guidelines around those things. The only thing there isn't guideline is the ability to move within these companies. Of course, companies like the idea to move between states and compete for incentives.
Yeah.
You know, can you imagine if a state said, hey, we're going to give you an economic incentive, but you can't build anywhere else in the United States?
Yeah.
That wouldn't happen.
Hey, this sounds like a good thing to put towards interim study. What about, here's one that's a big budget buster or help, and that is Senator Adams' bill that deals with coal exporting. Jim, I know you're going to shake your head over this one. It's about $51 million that Utah would invest in a California coal plant.
Okay, guy in California is trying to build a private port right next to the port in Oakland, right over the Bay Bridge there as you go into Oakland. He can't get the money. Nobody will give him the capital. There's billions of dollars out there in ready cash capital. He can't sell it. He comes to our coal counties, which are flat on their back now, and much like the Music Man, he cons them into thinking, this is going to be it. This is going to solve all your problems.
They find a funding source.
And here we go. The taxpayers are going to go in, help this guy build his private port. By the way, we're not taking an equity position in the port. We're buying the right to export coal for 30 years. 25% coal is down over the last 10. Who knows who's going to be there to pay this loan back for the last few years, except poor St. Pete County is going to be stuck with a bill. And if they can't pick it up from the revenues generated, who's going to pick that up? This is a terrible, terrible, terrible thing.
Dan, Carbon and Emery County need some help.
They do. Jim brings up good points. I don't have a great answer for it. I know that's rare and odd for me, but it's just I will be interested.
It's a large amount of money.
Yeah, it really
$50 is. $50 million.
Yeah, it's a big number, but there are a lot of big numbers being thrown around this year.
Yeah. Well, I should let you guys bring up one you want to talk about. I'm also interested in this air pollution bill SB 102 that would incentivize tax credits for Tier 3 fuels at our refineries. I mean, who wouldn't support this?
Yeah, as long as it's credits, I'm probably okay. You know what I mean?
This is coming from Jackson Brad,
as long as
Representative McKay.
It passed the Senate first round, 28-1. Guess who was the one? I went and talked to the fiscal analyst.
How many times has
it had a $4 million note on it.
Well, I remember your problem with this.
It had a $4 million note on it. It's going to come out now, after I've talked to the analyst and talked to the lawyers, between $150 and $250 million to the taxpayers, writing a check, because it's a tax credit, to our five big polluters to do what they ought to be doing and what in so many other states they're doing for free. This comes out of our classrooms into Chevron and Tesoro. Give me a break.
I actually think, Jim, as soon as I saw the look on his face, I remembered it when we talked about this bill. And for that reason, I do have some concern. So, look, we're coming together.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Dan McKay and Jim Debacus. In our next segment, we're going to talk about Super Tuesday and the presidential election.
Hi, listeners. This is Ross Chambliss, producer at KCPW, and we are returning now to the second segment of this week's Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm sorry to say that we experienced some unexpected audio problems while recording this week's show up at the Capitol. Anyway, we are playing this week's show for you anyway. Sorry again. Thanks for understanding.
This is Jim DeBacchus, proudly on the left.
Dan McKay, on the right.
Natalie Gochner, in the radical middle. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We have this rule on the show that we try to talk about local issues, and yet we have a presidential campaign going on. But it's so fascinating to me because there's all these touch points in Salt Lake City in this presidential campaign.
Yeah.
We have a debate coming up. We had Speaker Ryan in town this week. And now we've got the news, and we are taping this a day ahead, that Governor Mitt Romney will be addressing, giving his remarks about the presidential election from the University of Utah. He plans to do politics.
So anything, should we film or should we tape three different versions of the show?
What he says.
What the announcement is.
Yeah. He's in the race.
Well, I think we can acknowledge that the Republican Party's in shambles right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how...
Everybody is circling the wagons trying to figure out there's got to be a solution to Trump.
Yeah,
everyone.
I just don't know. I mean, I've written a column about this that's going to run Friday, and I'm going to have to edit it based on what happens tomorrow. But, you know, you've got a candidate who... you know, offends women, offends Muslims, offends POWs, offends Mexicans.
Doesn't deny
connections with the KKK.
KKK, as I say, his affiliation with KKK.
Yeah, nobody seems to care. And it's confounding, and it's...
you know who cares? Utah cares.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm surprised by? I mean, I'm proud of Texas. I think Texas did the thing, but nobody's surprised by Texas results. March 15 will be interesting because... we're waiting on Florida. Can they figure out how to vote for Rubio as opposed to voting for Donald Trump, right?
And
it's a winner-take-all state. So there's a lot of fear circling the Republican wagons that if there isn't a decision on who's out, like Carson's out and Kasich is out, if Rubio and Cruz are still fighting off the other parts, where are those votes going to go? And I know that our friend Jim is just dying.
He's loving it because he says he's saying he predicted all this.
Yeah, I know.
No one can predict this.
Yeah. But you've been saying this is a movement, and Governor Christie so much has said that after Super
Bowl. What I'm saying is that Republicans, particularly moderate, quote, reasonable Republicans, are getting exactly what they deserve. They have been using this evangelical kind of Tea Party radicals, and they have been winning in state legislatures. They've been getting the senators elected, like Mike Lee. And now the chickens have come home to roost, and guess what? They've taken over, and they're going to have their candidate for president. Where were all you moderates when all you were loving taking over the House and the Senate and doing stuff and running? Now they're running your party, and you guys deserve exactly what you have.
What's funny about this, or not funny, depending on how you look at it, is it's a fulfillment of prophecy by Hamilton and by Monroe.
Okay.
Which is,
I want to hear this.
Right? Yeah. But they said that anybody that depends on the South for their party's base will always be in trouble. Which is interesting, right? Because you look at the South, and the results through the South were very much Trump-oriented, right?
Yeah.
And to speak to this movement, Hamilton was very clear about anybody relying on the South was eventually doomed, and it has happened party after party.
Interesting. Okay, so let's do this. Let's make your. Well, the listeners will know tomorrow, but make your bet on what Romney's going to do tomorrow, Jim.
Mitt Romney tomorrow will announce that he's available to be drafted and keep everything in flux because he wants everybody's second round vote at the convention.
Okay, good.
See, and I think Mitt Romney is going to announce a new chain of car wash doors that are going to be huge. And it's going to be the Romney Trump Vehicle Wash Express. And I'm really, really excited about what it will do to the presidential race.
So my prediction is he's doing this at the Institute of Politics on the University of Utah campus, and he's asked students to be there. And I think he's going to just call out Trump.
He's
going to
plead. Yeah.
I think he's going to expose Trump for what he is. and just show some leadership from the conservative side of the aisle, and then he's going to see where that goes.
Robert Cairo, just to go back to Dan's for one second, Robert Cairo has the best books I've ever read on politics, and his histories of Lyndon Johnson, his biographies. And there's a moment where finally Johnson, who is from Texas, passes the Civil Rights Act in 1965. His aides come running in and said, "We won, we passed the bill." And Johnson looks over and says, "Yes, and we've lost the South for a generation." And that's exactly what's happened. You're right.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, interesting. I just want to make one other kind of national connection, but Paul Ryan was in town this week, and I went to that. Dan, were you there? I know Jim was.
No, I didn't need to make it.
I didn't
went
get
to
invitation.
It was interesting. You had Chaffetz there. You had Governor Herbert there. You had Jonathan Johnson there. You had, President Niederhauser was there. So there was sort of a political elite. But my goodness, when Paul Ryan went to the microphone, he's a star. I like that guy.
Yeah.
And, that's who Mitch should have turned the party over to.
Well, Trump said about him yesterday. I mean, Trump declared war on...
Yeah.
Look, what they don't understand...
He basically said, if you don't play ball with me, you're going to get...
Guess what? You know who runs
like
Washington's domestic
Trump.
Policy? It has nothing to do with the president.
Yeah.
Every tax bill, everything that a President Trump is going to want to do goes through that speaker's chair. And for him not to know who the boss is...
Revealing.
And for him to be president, Ryan has to keep the majority. In other words, so Trump is soiling the bed he has to lay in to borrow from less crude terms. But that's it. That's just it. And the frustrating thing about that is there's more to come.
Yeah.
And I think
more
that
to
way,
come.
You're probably right. I think that's probably what he's going to do.
He's just kind of getting it going.
Yeah.
Now, we also have the debate March 21st in Salt Lake City. A lot of talk that Donald Trump won't participate. It would certainly, diminish
the
reach
Utah,
of the debate.
Yeah.
Yeah, the reach of it.
You know, I have been known to sit in for people in debates, and I am available that night, and I...
You're about as much of a conservative as Donald Trump is.
Oh, whoa.
Maybe it would work.
Yeah, just saying.
Well, it's needless to say, we've got a lot more to come, and this could get much more interesting before it is done. I think we all agree on that.
Yeah.
Let's come back to Capitol Hill for a little bit. Let's talk about Medicaid expansion. You guys are more steeped in this than I am, but I've been following Representative Dunnigan's bill, and it looks like it's got some good support from Mayor Buskupski and Mayor McAdams because it helps the homeless population. It's still a small subset of who needs help, but it would be progress, Jim.
No, it wouldn't. I would not vote for that bill no matter what happens. This is a spit in the face. I was astonished to see Greg Bell from the Hospital Association say, Dunnigan is a hero. Dunnigan is a goat. Just a couple of features.
Goat. Yeah, I love goats.
There's two proposals. One helps 17,700 Utahns. The other helps 105,000. One costs the state $417 per person per year. The other, $2,259. Dunnigan's bill is a disaster. It's dumb beyond proportions, and it's dumbed down, just like we talked about, in order to try to get all of these legislators that don't want anything. I'm not going to be there. This is the Gene Davis's bill. SB 77 is reasonable. It takes $532 million of federal dollars a year. Dunnigan's pathetic cover-only parolees is so second-rate. I'm not going to be there.
Yeah. Dan, do you want to say anything from the majority party on this one? I mean, Jim makes some pretty compelling points about the fiscal...
Yeah. And Jim is trying to expand in a sustainable way. And I recognize... Sustainability is not necessarily the key to the minority party, but when you actually have to balance the budget, it actually matters. For example, had we expanded, so Medicaid expenses this last year in overall growth, we had $37 million in just current Medicaid expenses growth, $37 million that we didn't have.
Yeah.
So now we're going to add to that liability and say, well, that should be compounded by the additional 44 in the first year, but it will grow the next year.
Yeah.
So that's the problem is Representative Dunnigan recognizes what it takes to sustain a budget And as a result, he's pushing to sustain the budget. And that's what his plan actually does.
Jim, what are you predicting on the hate crimes at this point? The hate crimes bill?
They got it yesterday.
It's done.
It's done. There was this preposterous equivalency between Representative LeVar Christensen's ridiculous bathroom bills and we don't have to abide by the Supreme Court. And then they try to pull this equivalency and hate crimes on the other side. So that's what many senators said. We did a gay bill last year. We shouldn't even talk at this. It really was a low point in the session.
Got it. What about, I guess we're going to keep Columbus Day?
Yes, finally an American holiday that Jim can join in celebrating.
Columbus Day. You know, one of the most moving moments I've had as a legislator was the hearing where Native Americans, hundreds of them, came. They drove from the Four Corners. They drove from all over the state. They were young. Some of them were dressed in their Native garb. And for the first time in history, we've never had a Native American legislator in the history of the state. They stood. They gave their testimony. I wish we could talk about it. It was compelling, amazing to see these young people feeling as though they had some power. And to hear some of the comment, it passed through the committee. We had a hearing on the floor of the Senate. And to hear the complete insensitivity, I mean, a lot of senators just don't even understand what the issues are. And that is perhaps even more sad than the holiday being lost.
Dan, is there anything you wanted to chat about before the end of the session?
Well, we've got one of the big initiatives that Senator Weiler and I have been working on now for 3 years. Speaker Lockhart assigned, Senate President assigned Todd, but assigned Senator Weiler and I to an Indigent Defense Commission. And we worked like crazy to try and find solutions from the state level that work. We have buy-in from the prosecutors. We have buy-in from the defense council. The only group we don't have buy-in from is the ACLU has just decided it really doesn't matter from the state's effort what we put forward. We're probably going to get sued.
Yeah.
And it's sad because we have worked in good faith to try and come up with solutions that work for the Utah deal. But I get where they're coming from. They're worried about indigent defense, i.e. the constitutional requirement to make sure people have representation in the courts. I get that. But I think they're going to have a tough uphill battle because we're going to make a serious effort here at the state to head off the problems we have in indigent defense.
Jim, anything you want to chat about?
I think that's a terrific initiative that Dan and Todd have been working on. It's terrific. Sometimes the audacity just kills me. I was in a tax meeting the other day. Utah Manufacturers Association and the blah, blah, lobbyist groups are there with their $500 shoes kind of wandering around. And with a straight face, they said, we want $59 million a year in a tax break because blah, da, 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 da. It's only fair. And I looked at them and I said, what planet do you live on? I mean, that's money directly.
We live on a planet that wears $500 shoes.
This is money directly out of state funds and from our school children as things get pushed around. And you're sitting there telling us the Manufacturers Association deserves this money more than the school kids. And you know what? It passed 5-1.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no outrageousness if you say it's inputs in and inputs out, or you say some slogan that we won't wave a flag for when it comes to giving businesses a tax break, whether it's the refiners or whether it is the billion-dollar pipeline or whether it is U-Star, which we need to take a close look at. There's just a lot of people out there with their hands out, and it is depriving our children of what they need.
We need to get a gripe.
You mean the things that add to the economy and add jobs?
We always like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Dan, you have a gripe ready to share?
Yeah, my gripe is we're doing nothing about daylight savings time again this year. Nothing. And I know everybody, you know, that's a – I don't
is it
love
the outdoor recreationist in you that
– I don't know. For me, what I like, I want to – okay, so if I had a preference, king for a day, right?
Uh-huh.
I would like to spring forward and stay strong.
Yeah.
So that I get all my nice evening lights, and even if you think about it, it makes ski season even more reasonable because we can start skiing at 8:30, 9 o'clock. We get a little sleep in, right? And then you get to go and ski.
Yeah.
Keep the resorts open until 5. It seems great.
I don't like being different from the rest of the country. My daughter attended Arizona State University. Half the year we were in the same time zone, and half the year we were not. It was so confusing. Hey, my gripe deals with Governor Chris Christie and his endorsement of Donald Trump. Seeing him this week stand behind Donald Trump, Donald Trump responded to these, you know, Super Tuesday results. You guys see Christie behind him?
Didn't you feel dirty for him?
Oh, he just looked awful. He looked like a Stepford wife. There's all these cartoons. When Trump would hold up his hand, Trump has these short fingers, and they have these cartoons of Christie thinking, oh, those look like sausages.
He had that Nancy Reagan glaze as he was looking at this guy that he called everybody.
If you're in trouble, if you need help, you know.
Yeah. So I saw on Twitter someone, you know, a Satan hashtag type of thing.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, ask me what the price of a soul is, Trump endorsement, you know, type of deal. I thought,
I thought he sold out, and that's my gripe. And Jim said he's going to pass on his gripe this week since I didn't get a gripe last week.
And I already gave my gripe
behind
him, so
you
did gripe. When you get towards the end of the session, Jim is always gripe.
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Representative Dan McKay and Senator Jim Kibakis. Our program is produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.